Hi everyone, it's David Wheeler at Wickham Wanderers and you're listening to the Wickham Wanderers Show.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Wickham Wanderers Show. In the next hour, we celebrate being top of League One, which doesn't happen very often in itself. We'll reflect on Tuesday night's fantastic 5-0 victory up at Stockport. Look ahead to the trip to Wigan on Saturday. We'll hear from manager Matt Bloomfield. We'll chat to Phil in a few moments' time as well with our match briefing. Thanks to Wickham Wanderers Ex-Players Association, just over a week to go till their annual dinner. We'll hear from former assistant manager Richard Dobson. You'll be able to tell I'm excited to speak with him because I didn't realise how quickly I asked him questions. You can tell when I'm excited to speak to someone, get really quick. Amber Taylor, who's Wickham Wanderers women's goalkeeper, speaks to us a little later on as well. We'll kick off, though, with some breaking news, and that Huddersfield have now received their third call-up. So next Saturday's league game, which was due to take place at Adams Park, has now been postponed. So we'll be able to go to a Christmas light switch on instead. Also, some other news affecting a kick-off in that the game against Wealdstone in the FA Cup second round, scheduled for Saturday the 30th of November, has now it's been televised. It'll be on ITV, and it's an 11:30 kick-off. It's quite early, isn't it? That's due to TV scheduling, so some breaking news there. Let's bring you the latest from Tuesday night, though, at Edgeley Park and relive those goals.
Udo, now it's through on goal, and it's slid down, and that is a penalty. Penalty to Wickham Wanderers. Dan Udo was played in by Kone. Josh Cohen did the Luke Leahy role there, took the ball, went and stood on the penalty spot, diffused the tension from the situation, and then Richard Kone calmly walked towards him, collected the ball, and now he places it on the spot. And Richard Kone now looking for his seventh League One goal of the season, right footed against a big goalkeeper. Now he approaches the ball and scores. Never in doubt, Richard Kone has put Wickham 1-0 up on the road, and it's the travelling fans on their feet on the far side. Fred Onyedimma now getting onto the loose ball, running towards the edge of the area. He's got Scone alongside him. Still Onyedimma goes for goal and scores. And Wickham Wanderers are 2-0 up. Fred Onyedimma, his dancing feet went through the D and his left foot slashes it into the bottom corner. And Wickham Wanderers, 2 goals in 2 minutes. It's Stockport 0, Wickham Wanderers 2. That's a new routine. Joe Lowe slams the ball on the turf and Rabazzotti comes and kicks it. Now we can get it back with Cameron Humphreys on the left wing on the far side. He's in the penalty area now, cuts it back low, and then Kone's there, and it's 3-0. The cross was beaten out by the keeper, and Richard Kone, 2 yards out, couldn't miss from there. Says thank you very much. Stockport 0, Wickham 3. Short corner, Morley finds Humphreys. Humphreys clips it in unselfishly on Onyedimma, and there is the fourth. And this time it's Fred Onyedimma who's on the hat-trick. Humphreys with the buffet ball. Onyedimma nods it past Adai. And Wickham celebrating the right-hand corner flag. And it's Stockport 0, Wickham 4, and they're heading for the exit. Humphreys heads back from the goal line. Here's Kone. Onyedimma. Morley, goal! Aaron Morley makes it 5. And even more fans depart the stand behind the goal of Corey Adai. Aaron Morley opens his account with a superb right-footed finish. It's Stockport County 0, Wickham Wanderers 5. That's right.
Great to hear from Phil describing the goals on Tuesday night, accompanied by Toby Large as well. They'll be your commentary team up at Wigan on Saturday. Let's hear from Phil now, though, and find out what impressed him most.
Well, where do you start? I thought the start was fantastic. It's a good place to start, I guess. The first 25 minutes, I thought, you know, we didn't give Stockport any chance to breathe at all. And they're a good side, Stockport. And they, you know, a week earlier had beaten Reading 4-1, who were in great form. But I just thought the way that Wickham pressed all over the pitch really put their foot on the throat of Stockport, and then were really clinical as well. So to be 3-0 up after 17 minutes, you know, you could feel in the crowd that the game had gone for them at that point. But Wickham just didn't let up and continued to press. And yeah, Stockport had a bit of the ball at the end of that first half, but Wickham defended well and then pressed on in the second half. And the really exciting thing for me, Colin, is it wasn't the perfect performance. You know, it was a fantastic performance, but you can still see that there's room to grow, which is really, really exciting because momentum is there for Wickham. And Tuesday night was a great night for all concerned, be it listening at home or watching overseas or being there yourself and witnessing it in the flesh. A wonderful night for the club.
As you say, not just the goals, but the way the team performed seemed so impressive.
Yeah, there was one moment in the second half, especially, I think even at 4-0, Wycombe Wanderers were on the counter-attack and Dan Harvey sort of steaming forward, running about 70 yards at full pelt to offer the overlap on an attack at 4-0 up. I just thought really summed up the attitude of not just Dan Harvey, but the entire Wycombe Wanderers squad. You know, it was really, really impressive to see. And, you know, a result that took us top of the table as well, albeit having played a game more than Birmingham, but even so, a fantastic turnaround from the first two games, which were tough defeats, narrow defeats against Birmingham and Wrexham. And you could hear that, the excitement in the gaffer's voice as well. And he's got the tricky task now of trying to keep a lid on it, but it was good to speak to him after the game.
I just think we need to, you know, say about the application of the boys. Like, we had a long meeting last night, one at lunchtime today, another before we come here. They're listening, they're really respectful of the information we're trying to pass on, and the way they implemented it tonight, I'm so proud of the way they go about their business. We're really, really fortunate to have a real special group of young men in there, and I'm really, really proud of them.
A fantastic start as well, and rapid, quick fire, 3-0 after 17 minutes. Absolutely perfect start.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot made of our finishes and the way we finish games, and we wanted to come out of the blocks. We were so respectful of Stockport before the game because they've got a very, very good team. Like, they've done a great job here over a number of years now, and like, put the team together, and we knew the threats they were going to pose. We felt like we needed to come out of the blocks quick and impose ourselves on the game, because, you know, I've been here in the past when it's a tough place to come and get beat. So we wanted to impose ourselves on the game, and the way we pressed, I thought, was very, very good.
And the goals are coming from all over the place as well. And, you know, every time Wycombe went forward in that first opening 25 minutes, it looked like they were going to score.
Yeah, I felt like we had a real threat about us, a real energy and intensity. Obviously, you know, a lot of that probably played into it, the fact we were able to rotate on Saturday and utilise the whole squad. And, you know, it was tough to leave some of the players out. Like, you know, Lukey's scoring and he's playing extremely well, but it's a tough decision. There's tough decisions all over the place, and all I can do is try and be respectful and offer my honest opinion on what I'm going to go and do. But, you know, there's such competition for places that everyone knows they've got to be at it to play games. Yeah, and I just felt like the fresh legs we had, the fresh energy we had after the weekend was good in that opening period, and then we carried it on through the game.
And a first goal for Aaron Morley too, to cap off a fantastic night.
Yeah, like, Azza's been very, very good for us, isn't he? You know, he's been very, very good. We're really pleased with him. As soon as I heard that he was available from Bolton, we wanted to do it because, you know, the way he plays and, the competition for places in that middle of the pitch, it's really, really pleased for him to get on the score sheet. And he's obviously been very good for us.
Five goals, but we shouldn't discount the clean sheet as well, which was a big positive.
Yeah, I was just looking at the stats there with Ben Cern. We were just looking at, you know, obviously six in the first two games, but we've kind of tightened up a little bit recently. We want to entertain, we want to score goals, but we don't want to keep conceding as many as we have. We want to tighten up a little bit, and really, really pleased. I think that the physical threat that Wootton offers was always going to be tough, and I felt like Joey and Caleb had a tough night a couple of weeks ago against Cosgrove, but they looked like they learnt a huge amount that night. They dealt with the challenge this evening a lot better. Louis Barry's a massive threat for Stockport off their left. Jasper was very good. So yeah, really, really pleased with the clean sheet. There's so much that goes into it right from the front of the pitch. And as a team performance, a squad performance, we have to be pleased.
Two for Richard Kone, two for Fred Onyedimma. Fred seems to have slotted in seamlessly.
Yeah, he's top of the level. You know, I've worked extremely hard. I've been bashing his phone all summer trying to see if we can do it. He's obviously going to have a lot of other attention elsewhere, higher up the pyramid and abroad as well. He had a lot, but this club means something to him because he's been here before, and you know, I was really hoping that we was able to get him back in. He's a top player for this division. I'm really, really pleased that the goals have come from him and for Richard, and I just feel like I need to say thank you to the supporters that made a long trip on Tuesday night up the M6 and leaving work early, getting back in the middle of the night. Those guys, you know, I've repeating old messages. I want them to be proud of their team. I want them to enjoy watching us. I genuinely thank them for the support that they've given me in 20 whatever years it's been. So for those guys to come away from home and see their team score five goals, but you know, I want to keep a lid on it as well, because it's just so long to go, mate. You know, we've done a lot of work over the summer and putting some stuff in place, but we've got a tough game at Wigan on Saturday, and all our focus now has to be on recovering, preparing and making sure we turn up there with the energy that we need.
You went over to the fans, and we know a lot of managers do it, the fist bumps, it's a great touch. They also, you seem to have a bit of a moment afterwards as well, just to kind of soak it in.
Yeah, I think it's just because, you know, my mind goes back to some tough days, some tough away days, and Exeter and Orient last Christmas was, you know, really tough to get through the Christmas period, and it just fills me with so much pride that our supporters, you know, I was fortunate to play for a long time, and I want them to enjoy watching their team the way they backed us tonight. And you know, I know that they want to support, they want to see us entertaining and scoring goals. And it was just nice to see them in full voice, because football is a cruel game at times, and it's a tough industry. So when you have nights like tonight and you see our supporters so full of pride at their team, because it's their team ultimately, it's their team that they spend their hard-earned money supporting. So to see them with smiles on their faces, I was trying to take in some pictures of different faces I recognise, and the smiles and the support, it just felt like a nice moment to try and take in before we get back to zero and reset and get ready for the weekend.
Excellent to hear from him, and him praising the players, you know, quite rightly so. Fantastic to hear that Richard Coney today has been named the PFA Fans Player of the Month, and his story just seems to be getting better and better as well, especially with two goals.
Look, and it's fully deserved. He's a great lad, Richard, and obviously, you know, his journey into football, his journey to Wickham, it isn't the sort of stereotypical footballer's route, but you know, he's a unique character on and off the pitch, and you know, he's very humble, very driven. He's willing to learn, and you can see that, especially from his senior pros and teammates. The bond he has with everyone at the club is phenomenal. But look, on the pitch, he can be unplayable at times, can't he? And again, the other night, two great goals, and he'll admit this himself, there's still room for him to grow and improve, which is even more exciting because, you know, when you bear in mind, he's only been a professional footballer since the 1st of January this year. He's come a long way in that period, and we know that he can really go all the way to the top. So it's great to see, and it's great that he's a Wycombe Wanderers player.
And great as well that the manager's been nominated once again for October for the Manager of the Month. And there was a really nice quote I saw from Henry Winter writing on social media, just saying about how it's such a great advert for his man management, and that's something that you'll have seen up close as well.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, we all know this about Matt Bloomfield, Wycombe fans included, because, you know, he speaks to us every week, and, you know, he wears his heart on his sleeve sometimes, and he's like a fan, isn't he? He feels those defeats just as much as we do. You can see that and hear that in the interviews. You know, and he had a really bad spell last season, and I think all managers and coaches really have to go through that. It's part of the learning curve, and time is the biggest resource in football, and it isn't a time afforded to everybody. And Matt Bloomfield really learned a lot last season, but this calendar year has been phenomenal in terms of his growth and how he's implemented his style and philosophy on the team, and that takes time as well. But it's been wonderful to watch. And, you know, the likes of Henry Winter and the national media, you know, there weren't many people writing about Wycombe Wanderers in August for this coming season. And I think sometimes we like it a bit like that. And I think we've been coming up on the rails and blindsided a lot of fans this season. And hopefully we continue to do so. The award nomination is fully deserved, as it was the other month as well. Matt Bloomfield, I'm sure, will take it, you know, the nomination as a reflection of not just him, but his entire staff and the players as well. It's a team effort at Wycombe Wanderers, and he's the boss. He sets the tone, he sets the ethos, and et cetera. But, you know, it's a big result for everybody, and fingers crossed he wins it.
It sounds like an obvious thing to say, but there must be such a contrast for the manager and the players as well, just going on this unbeaten run of 11 league games, especially, as you say, after, you know, last year where, you know, there was such a run of games without a win.
Yeah, you know, and tough times don't last, but tough people do. And I think Matt Bloomfield is testament to that. He's also a humble guy. He knew he was learning, and young managers have to learn. And he got his head down and came through it. And, you know, I think he's proven a lot of people wrong, not just at Wycombe in terms of fans, but football in general. And I think, again, a lot of young coaches have to come through that. It's a rite of passage, and not everyone does. But yeah, he's certainly enjoying these moments, and quite right too. But he also knows that there's a long way to go yet, and that's all his focus is on, I think. And long may that continue.
And the goals in the four columns is so impressive, not just in League One, but in the other divisions as well.
Yeah, you know, we're leading the stats, as you say, not just in League One. You know, the run that we're on, the goals that we're scoring, the rate that we're scoring at. I think that's five games now where we scored three or more in a row. This is phenomenal. I think, you know, five consecutive league wins, I think, has equaled a record set by the previous manager. You know, and we have another game on Saturday in the league, and we're looking to extend that. So, look, it's November. We have to keep a lid on it. But, you know, I think as fans and everyone, it's obviously a time to enjoy it and relish. We all know that football has its ups and downs, and, you know, you're there through thick and thin. And this is one of the thick times, I guess. So it's time to enjoy it.
And as you say, another game on Saturday. It feels like a lot of times we say this, but we're heading into quite a busy period.
It's always busy, isn't it? But this one seems to be very busy indeed. I think two long back-to-back away trips, a Tuesday, Saturday, is hard. We've got the Football League Trophy on Tuesday, which is a huge game for the club as well, because a win guarantees progression from the group, which I think is really important for the squad. And then, you know, then another league game the following Saturday at home to Huddersfield. And then I'm starting to lose track of what that is and even who I am at this point. But, you know, it's a great ride that we're on. And, you know, many stops to go before we hit the end of the season and find out where we end up.
And it does feel, doesn't it? There's such a feeling of positivity, obviously, amongst their fans as well.
Exactly that. Results breed positivity, don't they? Especially for football fans. You know, we all know football fans, it is their right and prerogative to be slightly glass half empty at times. But, you know, when the good times come, like I said earlier on, you have to enjoy these periods and see where it takes us.
Well, have a good trip to Wigan yourself, of course.
Can't wait.
Phil will be bringing the whole match live here on Wickham Sound and on Wanderers TV as well, accompanied once again by Toby Large. You can hear the full chat with Matt Bloomfield on Wanderers TV as well.
Across High Wycombe and South Buckinghamshire and on your smart speaker.
Play Wickham Sound.
This is Wickham Sound.
The Chair boys are flying high in League One this season, so come on down to Adams Park, get behind the boys and play your part in what will be a memorable season for Wickham Wanderers.
71 minutes on the clock, up against Jed Stitt, dancing around on his line. The
take
right
your time,
foot
Rich.
Of
take
Richard
your time.
Kohner. Here he comes.
Score! Richard!
It's been goals, goals, goals for the Chair boys so far this season. Come on down to Adams Park to play your part and get behind the boys. Head to tickets.wwfc.com and use the code SOUND on booking for a chance to win a gantry experience at a Wickham Wanderers home match. Come on, you Blues.
Still to come in this week's edition of the Wickham Wanderers show, we'll hear from Wickham Wanderers women goalkeeper Amber Taylor. We'll also hear once more from the boss, Matt Bloomfield, speaks to us ahead of the trip to Wigan. But first, just over a week out from the Wickham Wanderers Ex-Players Association annual dinner, taking place on the 15th, the 14th of the fantastic annual event. And we've been speaking over the last few weeks to some of those guests who'll be attending. Wickham Wanderers former boss Gareth Ainsworth and his former assistant Richard Dobson due to be there. Unfortunately, Dobbo's got commitments abroad and won't be able to attend, but we have been speaking to him about his time at the club, starting with being in charge at the Centre of Excellence.
Yeah, obviously my introduction to the club was coming in the Centre of Excellence manager, and Paul Lambert was manager at the time. I'd moved from Brentford, and as you naively do as a young coach, you kind of think, well, I'll just do everything that I did at Brentford, because that seemed to work at Brentford. And you quickly realise that different clubs have different cultures and different ways of doing things. And, you know, I obviously had to adapt to the role at Wickham and the people that were there. So, you know, I've seen it as nothing but a home since I went there. You know, 16 years is obviously a long time to spend at one football club in this modern era. And, yeah, I feel very, very privileged to have worked for the club for 16 years, and obviously met a lot of good people along the way, and that was just the start of it.
And fantastic to reflect on some of the young players that you worked with then, and you know, to see what they're doing now as well, and to have played a part in their career development as well.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you look at Matty Phillips, and he's sort of coming towards the tail end of his career, and you think, wow, I had him as a 16, 17 year old in the youth team. I think he broke into the first team as a 17-year-old, didn't he? So, yeah, you're looking at it and they're going sort of full cycle. And I was actually up at St George's Park recently, so I'm on a diploma of football management with the LMA. And there was another course running concurrently up there, which was the player-to-coach course. And Darius Charles was on that. And I had Darius as a 15-year-old at Brentford. So you start to feel a little bit old when these players are coming around and starting to become coaches themselves, but it's great to see that they've been a student of the game throughout their time as players and now want to give a little bit back in that regard.
How does it work? Do you spot their talent really early, or do you think, oh, there's potential here, there's something I can work with, or does it really vary?
Do you know what? It varies a lot, actually. Yeah, there's some that you kind of go instantly, this guy is going to be very good, and you know, we need to nurture him very carefully. There's others, and you know, I've got a classic story about Max Kretschmar, who we signed at 14, and he was tiny. I mean, he could have gone and played in the under-12s, and no one would have batted an eyelid. And but he had a lovely awareness about him. He had a very cute footballing brain, and I remember saying to his parents at the end of season reviews, I will wait for him. I will wait for your son. You know, his body will develop in time. We've just got to be patient. So please don't worry about anything. We'll wait. And I said it again at 16, we offered him an apprenticeship and, you know, he was still small. And I said, don't worry about things. We'll wait for you. You know, you're going to be worth waiting for. And sure enough, I think he played 75 times in our first team. So, you know, it was worthwhile waiting for people like Max. They contributed to the club. He's gone and done really well in National League football, played there for a number of years. So, you know, our patience with him and waiting for him to develop physically to match the psychological and tactical attributes that he had has allowed him to have a career in the game and earn a living out of it, which obviously is success on our part.
And did you really welcome the opportunity to move up and work with the first team as well?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I'd done 12 years at youth development at that stage, and it's sort of a logical progression to go in and have a crack at first team level. Everybody wants to do it. They see that as the pinnacle. I've got to say that I've always enjoyed developing footballers and people, and that didn't change when I went to first team level. So it wasn't all about winning. I think if you develop the team and you develop individuals, the winning is a byproduct of that. So it was very much a development culture. And, you know, you've obviously heard in the past about the off-pitch development days that we've done and how we developed the psychological and social side of people, as well as the tactical and technical side. So, yeah, it was a case of bringing sort of what I'd done and what I'd learned through working at youth level into a first team environment and finding a nice balance between, you know, having to win on a Saturday and the importance of winning and obviously developing the players in the meantime and the squad as a whole. And I think we found a nice balance there. And obviously it paid dividends because we progressed and grew and did some really special things.
And how did you find that transition to be an assistant manager? Because it seems such a sort of Swiss Army knife of a role, doesn't it?
Yeah, do you know, this is a really interesting story. When I was taking the youth team, we used to send young players across from time to time to go and work with the first team. And Jess Graham went across one day, and when he came back to me, I said, "How was that?" And he said, "It was all right." He said, "It was Kadeem first." So Kadeem Harris went across, and I said, "How was that?" And Kadeem said, "Yeah, do you know what? I think the youth team is better than the first team at some of the things that we did today." And Kadeem was quite sure of himself. You know, he was he had a nice cockiness about him, not in a horrible way, but he was very sure and confident. So I took that as Kadeem being Kadeem and being quite sure of himself. A week later, Jess Graham went across, and I said to Jess, how was that? And he said, "Do you know what? I actually think the youth team are better than the first team in some things that we do." And I thought, okay, well, that's an interesting comment, because Jess was the other way. Jess wasn't sure enough of himself and needed to be a little bit more sure. And so I thought, okay, this is interesting. Two of them have said the same thing. When I went up to work with the first team, I spent the first month with the first team players and thought to myself, youth team are actually better than the first team at some of the things that we did. And certainly in terms of possession and the way that we'd played, the players that we had in the youth team were very comfortable. So it was no surprise for me that when they went into a first team environment, they were able to cope at a very young age. We had a number of teenagers that went into the first team around about that period. But I'd always worked very much on problem solving. So there's a wonderful saying, and I love it, and I've got to get it right because I don't want to get it the wrong way around for you. But it's great coaches don't fill the buckets, they ignite the fires. And I think it's a wonderful way of explaining that the best coaches don't tell people what to do. They give the players problems and say, right, how do you solve this problem? Find your own way. And if you're essentially giving the tools of how to do the job to the players so that they, you know, you're almost making yourself redundant as a coach if you do it well, which is where you want to be. So I very much worked under that principle as a youth team coach. And fortunately, through doing that, we'd given them young players the tools to cope at first team level. And, you know, as I say, a number of them went into to play in our first team and beyond and into Championship and Premier League football and international football. And, you know, it was sort of obviously a very proud era for us as development people to watch that progress and for to see that transition of young players from youth team football into first team football and on to have good careers in the game.
And it must have helped you so much to have had that experience of working with the youngsters. And then, you know, if you needed to bring any through, you knew them all already.
Yeah, I thought that was a really key aspect of that, really. I think sometimes when players move from a youth team environment into a first team environment and the staff have changed and, you know, there's no familiarity, the staff don't know the players particularly well, you sometimes get a blockage there. And I think I kind of moved with them, and certainly the likes of Josh Schoen and people like him. You know, I signed Josh at 14, and as he moved through into youth team football and into first team football, I made that same journey. So we almost carried each other through it. Even with Matty Phillips, you know, I was pretty fortunate that Peter Taylor invited me to come and spend time around the first team and be around the first team dressing room on match days. So when Matty made that transition into first team football and played with Peter, I was there to help Matt through games. And we used to do what we called a consistency chart, because Matty could be the best player on the pitch for 70 minutes and then he'd make a couple of mistakes and it would get to him and all of a sudden he'd be substituted 5 minutes later. And so we used to talk about, you know, what is it that you need to do to maintain that progress? And if you make a mistake, how do you wipe it out of your mind and continue? And so I used to do that work with Matty alongside what he was doing with the first team. And obviously it helped him in his career. So I think that was quite an important transitional period for everybody at the club, and certainly helped with bringing them young players through.
Was it quite an interesting time working under Gary Woddick and then obviously with Gareth taking over as well?
Yeah, look, I love Gary. I keep in regular contact with him. I think he's just one of the best people in football. You know, there's people in football often get a bad rap at times and reputations can go before people. But I got to say that Gary is the most honest and decent human being you could ever wish to meet. And, you know, I'm really pleased for him at Walsall at the moment that they're going so well. I wish him nothing but success. You know, I love him to bits as a person. And then obviously, you know, Gaz comes into the fold and he's a very different type of person to Gary. You know, far more demonstrative and you know, a real showman. So, you know, you had two very different types of personalities there. Obviously, Gary had come through a youth department and had done the work beforehand to get to management. Gaz's trajectory was very, very different, you know, and he'd gone straight from player into manager. And I think he said it himself, he had a lot to learn at that stage. I think, you know, fortunately, I was there alongside him, having done all that work previously. And so it balanced it off. And, you know, Andrew Howard used to call us yin and yang. I think that worked. You know, the balance between the two of us worked. And obviously, that the longevity that we had means that something went right along that period.
And great for you, because it really feels, I guess, as well, looking back on it, but, you know, you settled in as a partnership so quickly and it worked so well.
Yeah, I mean, look, we were friends beforehand. You know, Gaz came onto the coaching staff, and when he first made that transition to become a sort of player coach, yeah, we sat together in the same room, and I'd like to think that I was able to mentor him with the knowledge that I had. So, you know, we spoke a lot. We had good times together, and then he gets offered the job, and you know, there's already a relationship that's been built there. So, you know, that just continued. And obviously, there are other good people in along the way that contributed a great deal. And, you know, particularly thinking about people like Lee Harrison and Dave Waits and the likes that were a big part in the culture of the club. You know, culture doesn't just come down to one person. It's everything you say and everything you do. And that takes into account everybody. So, you know, if you've got a lot of people who are sort of singing from the same hymn sheet, the message is strong. And I think as a consequence, the coaching team and the staff around that, and, you know, when I look back, and Andrew Howard was quite pivotal when he came in, you know, we had a lot of people singing from the same hymn sheet and a very strong message and identity coming from the very top of the club.
And it sounds obvious, but fantastic that you were given, you know, so much time to build and to put in, you know, what you wanted to and what you achieved during your time there.
Yeah, and I've learned that lesson, you know, with my brief tenure at QPR. I think one of the great things at Wickham was that no matter who was in charge, it was always made very clear that the manager was king and the staff were king. So the players could never really down tools on you, because they always knew that they'd go before you did. And as a consequence, you end up with a group of players that go, right, we've got no excuses here. We can't point the finger at the staff who's going wrong, because they're, you know, they're well liked here. So it just made for a really, really strong environment where everybody worked hard for each other. We had a saying that, you know, it's not a give and take environment, it's a give and give, because if everybody gives, we're all going to end up benefiting from it. But if anybody's looking to take, then it becomes a little bit more individualistic. So we sort of move away from that taking side of things and just concentrating on giving and giving and giving. And, you know, the self-sacrifice that people made, and I go back to someone like David Wheeler in the final of the playoffs against Oxford. I mean, his role that day was so self-sacrificial in terms of tracking their left back that we identified as a danger. But he was willing to do that for the good of the team. That's the type of people that we had. And Matt Bloomfield, likewise, you know, the running that he used to do for Bayoak and Fenwa. And it just worked. You know, you go into QPR where players and staff there have seen off several managers over the years. And, you know, all of a sudden it's a very different environment and a lot more individualistic. You know, there's not the same sense of team and camaraderie. And it's funny because they probably look down at Wickham quite a bit as a sort of big London club, an ex-Premier League side. But there's actually so much that they could have learned from Wickham Wanderers and what happened within Wickham Wanderers that could help QPR. And it's a shame, really, because they could take all the good from Wickham and they'd be so much better off for it.
I'm sure you couldn't have experienced the range of things that happened during your time at the club, from, you know, going out of the Football League and out of business to getting into the Championship.
Yeah, I mean, incredibly tough times, but you've got two options. You can either use it as an excuse or you can go, well, you know, we don't want any excuses here, because if you're using excuses, it means you failed. So we had to find a way. And that was a saying that we used over many, many years about finding a way, whether it's to win a game or whether it was to make something work at the start of the season. And, you know, we survived at Torquay and went, right, we've got to roll our sleeves up and do something different here, because the finances haven't changed. The club's in a whole world of trouble financially. And, you know, we can't rely on money appearing from nowhere here. We've got to do things differently. And we looked at everything. I mean, we picked the club apart that summer. Obviously, recruitment was really good. We brought in some really good players. And on what was probably a mid-table conference budget, we managed to get to a playoff final that season, which was just incredible, the momentum that we picked up. And I think it was that attention to detail and the deep thought behind how we're going to do it, how we're going to make it work. And we'd learned a lesson. You know, we never wanted to be in that position where we were fighting against relegation out of the Football League again. And obviously that would have meant the end of the club. So, you know, we had to do something drastically different. You know, I think that era of Wickham was born through the thought that went into that summer and the way that we progressed from there.
And obviously your relationship with the manager really key as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Look, and you know, we've always got on well. People haven't necessarily seen the arguments behind the scenes that we had at times. You know, we disagreed on things, and you know, I pushed back on Gaz at times, and I'm sure it was uncomfortable for him on occasions. But I think it was always done with the best intentions at heart. You know, I used to say to him, if I was in your position, I wouldn't do that, Gaz. And if he chose to go down that direction, I'd back him. You know, I always backed him on his decisions. But, you know, I was quite forceful at times in terms of saying that I wouldn't do it. And there were times where he respected that and said, nope, you're right. I've had to think about it. And we're not going to go down that route, whatever it might have been, whether it's tactics or, you know, signing of a player. You know, we had a very open relationship, not just me and him, but, you know, across the staff. Everybody fed into the relationship, and I think it was quite healthy. You know, everybody's views were respected, and everybody was open to air them. So, you know, I think we had a really respectful environment, and one where people could make that challenge, but it was always done in a respectful way.
And a real sense of pride from yourself as well for the impact you could have on the way the team played, and obviously as well with the coaching of the players and development.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I'm a purist. And so, you know, when we played Man City in a cup a few years ago, you know, I was absolutely purring watching them play. I love the games we played that way. My youth team played possession football and were a joy to watch. I loved watching them play at times. And so, you know, you've got to understand what you've got at your disposal, the players' capabilities, and make the best of what you've got. And you know, if you've got a small budget in the division, the likelihood is you're probably not going to get the best technical players. But what we did have was players with great heart, with great psychological strength, with excellent physical fitness. And then once we'd sort of made that the bedrock of our side, we then built on that and were able to bring in more talented players to create a better footballing side. And, you know, we had this reputation at times as a long ball team. But if you watch the goals, particularly the last two seasons that we were at the club, and you see a showreel of them goals, they were very different to the years of Bayo and Scotty Cashcutt as a front pairing. You know, we were far more clinical around the box. It was something that I worked very hard on, and some of our moves and the interplay that happened had really, really moved on as a team. And, you know, they're doing ever so well now, which is great to see, and playing a very nice brand of football. You know, we'd always look to move in that direction. But obviously, you know, when you've got the likes of Bayo Akinfenwa, who's as instrumental as he is, you use him. You know, you get the most out of what you've got. And I think we did that pretty well over the years, given the budget that we had.
And so pleasing for you to see, you know, the manager now doing so well, someone who you've worked a lot with as well.
Yeah, look, I love Blooms. We were close when I was there, when he was a player. We spoke a lot. He was obviously one of our generals, and me and him confided in each other a lot over the years. So, you know, when he come in as a coach, player coach, took him under my wing and tried to help him in that transition. He's a bright lad. He's very bright, and on top of being a wonderful human being. So he's learned to adapt. He's obviously cut his teeth at Colchester and has come back and sort of continued what we'd started. And as I say, there's been a bit of an evolution there. Money has given him a chance to do something that probably we didn't have that opportunity to do. But he's taken it with both hands, and you know, I'm just delighted for everybody at the club that they're doing as well as they are. You know, early days, obviously, and titles and promotion aren't won in October and November, but you know, you can enjoy these times. And you know, the result over this week, you know, 5-0 win away from home is just terrific for them. So yeah, enjoy it, Wickham fans. You know, it's great to see.
And overall, how do you look back at your time at the club? So many highlights from you know, the huge number of games that you spent in the dugout.
Yeah, do you know, so many different things. And you obviously look at the promotion to the Championship as the pinnacle. You know, I had a few occasions where I took the team where Gaz was either ill or in hospital with an operation and that. And they were real special moments for me, you know, to stand and do battle on a touchline against Ita Karanka and beat Birmingham at Birmingham and you know, win at Sheffield Wednesday. The first two wins for the club ever in the Championship were just real special moments. And, you know, I enjoyed, I think, following season we had Charlton away and won there. And, you know, they were great moments for me to go and be a front man, you know, instead of sort of behind the scenes at times. So, yeah, you know, special moments there. But I think when you look at the evening at Wembley and getting promotion with no fans there, it made it a very, very intimate moment between the people that had got the club to that point. And being such a tight-knit group, it was a really, really special evening that evening. You know, I've said in the past that the cleaners were banging on the door and saying, look, you do have to leave at some stage tonight. You can't stay here all night. But, you know, the boys were just enjoying each other's company as they always had done, but having achieved something really, really special. I mean, I don't think another club will ever get promoted to the Championship on the size of the budget that we did it on. I mean, that's how special it was. But more importantly, as I've always said, that, you know, there are two currencies in football, and if you can spend multi-millions on players, you've probably got a good chance of being successful. But there's another currency in terms of human connection, and we had that in abundance. And the connection between the people in that dressing room that night was just really special. The beginning of the following season, we showed a compilation of all the videos of the fans celebrating the win, them final moments at Wembley from their own houses and in pubs and wherever they were. And it was one of the moments where it just brings a tear to your eye when you realise how many people you've affected around High Wycombe and the world, and, you know, the wider Wycombe community. It was just really, really special that, you know, we'd made so many people so happy to achieve something so monumental for a club of that size.
And we're speaking to you into the build-up of the Ex-Players Association dinner, which is just over a week away. And the theme this year is 30 years in the Football League. And fantastic that you've been at the club for such a large part of that.
Yeah, obviously very proud. As I say, I went to QPR and I was a QPR fan as a kid. And, I'd like to say that that was a great moment for me. But it never really quite felt the same as the feelings that I had at Wickham. And I think that longevity at Wickham had made the club very close to my heart. And obviously because of the time and the investment you put into the club and the people there, I knew the faces of all the fans that travelled away to us with us. And they wouldn't necessarily know that I know them, but I did. Over the years, you just get to know them. You get to know them by name and, you speak to some of them, but you're always aware of those that travel the miles and end up at Carlisle on a Tuesday night. So I'd got to know the club and the people within the club quite intimately and, still very close to a lot of them now. I still receive a lot of phone calls from people from, whether it's players, staff or fans. And, that's been really special for me, the bonds that I've forged. And as I say, you go to a club like QPR that you stood on the terraces as a kid and you're hoping that it's going to mean as much, and you come away from it at the end of it going, do you know what? There's a bigger place in my heart for Wickham now than there was at QPR. And that was kind of a strange feeling for me. I wish both clubs all the best, and I really hope that both are successful. But in terms of my family and the time that my kids spent around Wickham, they very much look out for Wickham's results and very much Wickham orientated. So going back to your point about the ex-players, I think these nights are a wonderful celebration of the history of the club and the people that have been around it. I mean, the two Johns, Taylor and Bignall, have obviously done a great job over the years, and Hutch has been involved in there, and there are other people that I don't want to forget that have obviously played a big part in that as well. But I think Wickham do it far better than a lot of other clubs. And I think it's really important to respect the history of the club, to respect all the players that have brought the club to where it is currently. Everybody that goes to this evening, whether they played in a good Wickham side or a bad Wickham side, have played their part in getting the club to the point that it is now. And it's just great to see players from the 70s that maybe life's taken them in different directions and, they haven't seen each other for a number of years. All of a sudden, they're on a table back at Adams Park and it's like they're in the dressing room again, like they'd never left each other. I see these connections and I just think it's a wonderful celebration of what Wickham is all about. And I take my hat off to those that make it happen on a regular basis. I hope for many, many years that the club continues to celebrate its history, regardless of where it is in the Football League at that particular time.
And what's next for yourself? Do you have anything in the pipeline? Obviously, it's very disappointing that it didn't work out for you both at QPR.
We went in extremely difficult circumstances. They were on a horrendous run when we got there. We turned up there and there was 9 injuries, 2 more in our first game. So you got 11 injuries and you've got to try and keep them up. And so, we got to that point, kept them up, and then were told that because of financial fair play, there was a huge amount of money that needed to be found in a very short space of time. And that really we couldn't strengthen the side. It was, the hands were very much tied. So, that was disappointing because it would have been nice to have known that beforehand and understand exactly the circumstances that we walked into. But it was what it was. And you try and make the best of a very difficult situation. What the last year has given me is a great time to reflect. I've gone and done courses. So as I said, I'm on the League Managers Association Diploma of Football Management at the moment. So, up at St. George's Park every month and doing that. I've gone and done a couple of language courses, a body language course. I'm very interested in psychology and a lot of time to reflect. And I think probably in many respects, whilst QPR was disappointing, there were some good things to come out of it. The technical director there, Chris Ramsey, who's very highly respected in the game and one of the top developers of players in the country, said to me 4 months after being in at QPR, I've waited 10 years to have someone like you at this club, and now you're here. I'm going to do everything I can to make you successful. And I just thought that was a wonderful statement from someone of his background. He said to me a couple of weeks before we got sacked, you know, obviously things aren't looking good, but if the board speak to me, I'm going to tell them they've got to keep you at this club. Unfortunately, they didn't. But again, you come away from that and the relationships are built with the players there. And in some respects, as difficult as the QPR job was, you come away going, I'm actually a little bit more secure in what I am and who I am now. And, you know, I'm quite optimistic about the role that I can play in my next job, whatever that might be. So I'm very open-minded about that at the moment. You know, I'm at a really good age with a lot of experience under my belt, 650 games as assistant manager in the Football League across three divisions. So, you know, my next project is going to be a big one and hopefully one that I can do for many years and make a real stamp on the game, wherever that might be.
Well, it's been a real pleasure to speak to you. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
No, absolute pleasure. Thank you, Colin.
Across High Wycombe and South Buckinghamshire and on your smart speaker.
Play Wycombe Sound.
This is Wycombe Sound.
Really enjoyed hearing from former assistant manager Richard Dobson. I could have chatted with him for a lot longer. We should have had him on next week, shouldn't we, now that we've got us all games off. But lots to look forward to still. We'll hear from manager Matt Bloomfield in the final knockings of the show, if that's an expression. But first, we're following the Chair Girls, and they're in League Cup action on Sunday. They'll be taking on AFC Varsity at Burnham. I've been catching up with goalkeeper Amber Taylor and finding out a bit more about her football journey.
I started playing like locally when I was like 7 or 8 years old, and then I signed for Tottenham when I was 10, I think, and I was there until I was about 17, 18, and I left because I tore my ACL and I was out for a couple of years with that.
And do you feel really sort of proud in a way that you kind of bounced back from that injury and are doing so well now?
Oh yeah, of course, because obviously ACL injuries, I think everyone knows now how hard it is to come back and kind of get back to how you were, and obviously you have to do all the right rehab and prehabs and stuff. So I am really chuffed. Even though it did take longer than it should have, I am sort of back to where I want to be as well.
And they seem more and more common in the women's game as well.
Yeah, it's not nice, you know, how common it is. But it's nice to know that when you do take ACL, you're also not alone. You have got like other people to speak to about it as well. When I did it, it wasn't talked about much, so it was tough. Try and get through it.
I was going to say, was it really challenging mentally as well as obviously the physical rehabilitation and healing process?
Yeah, because I wasn't given the right things to do and by the club, and I was kind of left on my own to do it. And obviously with the help of like the NHS and stuff, it really helped. And I was at another club, and I had never signed for, never played a game, and they helped me get through it. And obviously back to where I want to be, and now I'm able to play and not have to worry about it.
And have you always been a goalkeeper or always wanted to be in goal?
No, I used to be a striker. I was a striker until I signed for Spurs, and then turns out I was pretty good in goal, so I never looked back.
Because you have to be a certain type of character, don't you, to be a goalkeeper?
Yeah, apparently we're all a bit nuts because we're having to dive at people's feet and obviously facing the hard shots and stuff, but you get used to it after a while.
How did you find that transition? Because I imagine it's very different from scoring goals to stopping them.
It's not as hard as what you think, because obviously as a striker, you know where they could place the ball when it comes to shooting and stuff. So you sort of go into the mind of a striker when you're saving it at the same time.
And especially for saving penalties, I guess, too.
Yeah, obviously penalties are a turkey shoot, but there is a trick to it sometimes.
Oh, we shouldn't get you to reveal your tricks.
No, I will not reveal that. I'll keep that one to myself.
Especially if any opposition are listening.
Yeah, let's hope not. if they are, they should be worried.
Because I guess it's such a pressure thing, and there's so much responsibility, because it's you get the blame, don't you, if goals are conceded. But also, conversely, I guess there's so much pride if you get to keep a clean sheet or make particular saves as well.
Yeah, obviously, I think every goalkeeper puts so much pressure on themselves to save everything that comes at them. And me especially, I think I should be saving everything that comes at me. But I look at that as ways like of how to improve and stuff, like for like the next game. And obviously, mentally, you have to be quite tough. But there is more positive than negative, definitely.
Are you inspired by other goalkeepers and perhaps kind of model yourself on their approach to the game as well?
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching football my whole life, and when I was at Spurs, it's such a weird one. I used to watch Brad Friedel when he was at Spurs and Hugo Lloris when I was younger, and I looked up to them so much. And obviously, being a modern-day goalkeeper now, I watch, you know, Edison, how he plays with his feet and stuff, and I try and learn from them.
It must be so pleasing as well for you to have played at that level and been a club of that size and now to bring that experience to Wickham as well.
Yeah, definitely. Being there so long, I learned so much and played with some great players, and they kind of helped me form who I am today. Obviously, all my other clubs as well. I was at Watford for a season, and that kind of helped me shape my character because that was my first season back from injury.
And how did your move to Wickham come about?
Carl messaged me on LinkedIn, actually. I was at Actonians the season before, and he kind of took a shot in the dark and said, would you be interested in coming for a trial? And I actually came from my holiday in Dorset, drove all the way to Wickham for a training session, and never looked back, really.
Did you return to your holiday afterwards?
Yeah, on the same day.
Oh, fantastic. So secured a move and went back to holiday.
Yeah, pretty much.
And what were your first impressions?
It was a very well-run club, and it's going in the right direction, which is what I want. I want to be playing as high level as possible, and I want to help be part of the club's history and helping them get to that level, because I'm not here for a short-term project.
And what would you say are the main strengths of the team from the time that you've been there, that you've seen so far? Because they've made some brilliant signings over the summer.
I think just the way we all bond together. We're such a tight-knit team, and with it being so tight, we all win, lose and draw together. And I think it helps us get through, obviously, the tough time we had a couple of weeks ago. We never would have got through that, I don't think, if the team was like well bonded.
And it's a great sort of advert for the team's resilience that you had those back-to-back cup defeats, but it hasn't derailed your league campaign, as we saw on Sunday.
No, absolutely not. We made sure that we came back from that, and we came back from it really strong. And it's just not just the win, it was the performance and the desire to win as well. I think we all needed it, and it's a good thing to start. Now we can keep going with this desire and keep winning football matches.
And again, it doesn't seem to matter who's sort of in the team. There seems to be a real kind of, everyone slots in really well.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing about us, is no matter what the injury is or who needs to come in and out of the team, it always seems to work.
And have you noticed as well the real increase in popularity in the women's game and young supporters as well, who are, you know, inspired by yourself and the rest of the team as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think because a lot of us, when we were younger, we didn't necessarily have that role model because it just wasn't there. And there's so much exposure now that seeing these young girls come to our games and, you know, in tier five, it's fantastic, and they really enjoy it and we enjoy having them.
Really nice that you can perhaps play a part in their interest and, you know, in perhaps some great goalkeepers for the future as well.
Yes, sure. I mean, that's one of the main reasons that I play, is to inspire the next generation. And like, I play football to enjoy it. No matter how good you are, that's why we all play at the end of the day.
And how do you find balancing, obviously, playing and training with kind of your outside life as well?
It's tough because obviously I live in Milton Keynes, so I travel quite far multiple times a week, and I'm a sport coach / PE teacher and TA work as well in like little schools. So I've got quite an active job as well as being active on the pitch, and obviously all the driving there and back for training and games.
But do you find it sort of such a release as well that when you are playing and when you're training as well, you can really sort of switch off and enjoy your game?
Yeah, of course. Even the drive there and back is nice, to just release away from work and be able to express myself on the pitch. And obviously the kids know I play football and they love it. So it's nice to inspire them as well at school, not just the girls that come and watch us.
No, absolutely. And really brilliant that you had such a convincing win on Sunday, and that must, you know, really encourage you and the rest of the team going into the upcoming games.
Yeah, we're going to take this win on Sunday and really make sure we perform the following Sundays and make sure we're scoring loads of goals and hopefully keeping clean sheets. That's going to be the next thing.
It feels like a really sort of key part of the season, I guess, that you're building this foundation, because I hadn't realised you hadn't played so few league games. I think it's only five so far, so it must be really great to be getting, and you've got a game in hand, I think, and over many of the teams around you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, we're focusing on ourselves rather than looking at all the other teams and going game by game rather than the future.
No, it's fantastic. We wish you every success for, obviously, the coming weeks, and really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Great chatting to Amber Taylor, Wickham Wanderers women's goalkeeper. Let's quickly flick our attention back to the men who travelled to Wigan on Saturday. And in fact, they're travelling today by the sound of it, because Phil's been speaking to the manager.
It's going to be another long trip on the road. Thank you to Dan and the board for giving us clearance. We're going to start making the trip on Thursday, go and do a cool down en route and just cut that down a little bit. It gives us an extra bit of time with the boys for bonding and all the rest of it. So, we'll attack it the best we can. We have to get the legs back. You know, these long Tuesday nights, we have to look at the distances and see whether we need to freshen up the team. But yeah, it's a really tough game. Sean's done a great job at Wigan. They play with a real clear style and philosophy and really clever patterns that they play with. It's going to be a tough game for us.
The win on Tuesday takes Wickham Wanderers top of the league, albeit having played a game more than Birmingham, but that puts a target on your back, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that it's a moment for us to savour, even if it's just for one night, because ultimately there's some incredibly big football clubs in our league who, you know, we know the competition around us, so even if it's just for one day, it's something for us to be proud of. But obviously we want more. We want more points, we want more results, and yeah, it's going to be a tough game. Big pitch at Wigan against the team who like to dominate possession, so we're going to have to be really structured and disciplined in our work. And if the boys take the same discipline and energy out onto the pitch like they did on Tuesday evening, then hopefully we can attack the game with the vigour that we need.
You mentioned the stats of the players, the distances and stuff, and it's a shout out as well to the analysts and the sports science behind all of the coaching as well, isn't it?
Yeah, look, Mikey, Mike, he doesn't like it when I call him Mikey, so I do it just to annoy him. Michael O'Mara and Ben Sayers and the numbers and the distances and how fit we need the boys to play the way we need to play and having the squad together that we can rotate and keep the energy on the pitch. There's so much hard work that goes on behind the scenes that people don't see of the guys that are such incredible support staff and backroom staff. Without their work, we wouldn't be able to produce the energy and the intensity with which we need to play. So there's so much work that goes into it, and they're all small bits that go into the big wheel of allowing the boys to go on the pitch and play.
Well, it's all clicking into place at the moment. The run's fantastic, and it's earned you a nomination for Manager of the Month, which is a great feather in your cap, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, really pleasing and a proud moment to be nominated. You know, I was just saying to Sammy, like, football's not linear. There's going to be lots of bumps along the way. So please don't take this as thinking we've cracked anything. We absolutely haven't cracked anything right now. We've had a couple of nice results and a decent month or two. But, you know, to be nominated for Manager of the Month amongst them, you know, look at some of the names that are now managing League One, some top managers who are a huge football club. So just to get a nomination, not for myself, but for the group of players and the staff is what it's all about, because genuinely, it's not about me, it's about the work that they do.
Real pleasure hearing from the manager, as always. You'll find out tomorrow morning, Friday morning, if you're listening on the podcast, whether he has won the Manager of the Month for October. You'll find out on the 2nd of December if David Wheeler, who's up against the likes of Liverpool in the Football Supporters Association's Climate Action Award, the midfielder who was appointed the first ever sustainability champion for the Professional Footballers Association in February last year, has been shortlisted, and the FSA's wide-ranging awards will be revealed at a ceremony in London on the 2nd of December. Enjoy the game if you're going to Wigan on Saturday. If you'll be listening on the radio or on Wanderers TV, you can hear that full chat with Matt Bloomfield as well, of course. And there's the EFL Trophy against Crawley, where Wigan Wanderers can progress from the group stage on Tuesday night as well. And as you heard a little earlier on, next Saturday's Huddersfield game has been postponed.